On these weeks leading up to Easter, we have been looking at four women who we've called women of the resurrection. Today we look at our final character, and that's Mary Magdalene. She was called Mary Magdalene because that's where she came from. She came from a village called Magdala. In fact, it was actually more than a village, it was a city. It now stands in ruins, but it's in a beautiful place right on the banks of the Sea of Galilee. And she was one of the women who gathered with Jesus when he was in Galilee, when he was teaching and preaching. The Bible tells us that she, with some other women, supported his ministry. So she was likely quite a woman of relatively high wealth. We don't think she was married, possibly a widow or a single woman. And I don't know about you, I've quite often got that Mary muddled up with other Marys. There are quite a lot of Marys, actually, in the Bible, in the New Testament. And we heard from Lally about the Mary called Mary of Bethany. Mary of Bethany was the Mary who was the brother of Lazarus and the brother of Martha. And sometimes even Bible scholars have got the two muddled up and thought that Mary Magdalene and Mary of Bethany were maybe the same person. But we now don't think that that's the case. There's no evidence to suggest that. It seems like this was a different Mary. And actually, we only meet Mary once in the book of Luke until we get to the crucifixion and the resurrection. And then she's mentioned in three of the Gospels, but in terms of her being present at the crucifixion, and in all four of the Gospels, she's mentioned by name as being there at the resurrection. The one thing we do know about her, we don't know very much about her, but the one thing we do know, because the Bible tells us this on two occasions, is that she had had seven demons cast out of her by Jesus. Now, sometimes that word seven, it might mean that there actually were seven demons. But also, whenever you hear the number seven mentioned in the Bible, it's number seven was seen as a picture of completion. In other words, this woman had been completely overwhelmed and oppressed by the devil. She was completely under a demon's control. And Jesus had cast those demons out and delivered her. In three of the Gospels, when we read the story of the resurrection, Mary Magdalene is always mentioned, but she's mentioned in the company of other women. And indeed, in John's Gospel here, where he only mentions Mary Magdalene, we still think that she was a part of a group of women at that point, because she comes to Peter and John and she says, "We don't know where they've laid him." So although in John's Gospel it only mentions Mary, it's not inconsistent with the other Gospels who say that there were a number of women there. Mary says, "We don't know," as if there had been others with her. But in John's Gospel, John chooses to bring Mary Magdalene center stage in his account of the resurrection. And so it's a good opportunity for us to look at what God might be saying to us this morning as we revisit this story, as Dan was saying, from over 2,000 years ago, but historically written down for us so that we too might believe. You always have to be careful, I think, when you try and work out what's going through somebody else's mind. And we know very little about what was going through Mary's mind at this moment, other than she's clearly deeply distressed. But let's hazard a guess from what happened to her in the last week. She is a woman who has been following Jesus since a dramatic event in her own life when he has saved and delivered her from being evilly oppressed. Since that point, she's been following him, supporting his ministry, and presumably she was almost certainly part of the group of disciples who traveled with Jesus the week before he's crucified, from Galilee to Jerusalem, which is about a three-day walk. So she's devoted. They then get to Jerusalem, And a week before Jesus is crucified, as we know, as we talked about last Sunday, it was Palm Sunday last Sunday, she witnesses people bowing down to Jesus. Now, my guess is that Mary, like the rest of the disciples, at this point is thinking, it's really going to happen. All the things that he's been alluding to, all the things he's been talking about his kingdom coming, it looks like it's going to happen. The crowds are with him. But yet, 5 days later, Mary is hearing the scribes and the Pharisees, who weren't going to miss out on this opportunity, standing at the foot of the cross, having travelled out from the centre of Jerusalem. They weren't going to miss this. The Pharisees and the scribes and the elders of the people, they weren't going to miss this opportunity. They left the centre of Jerusalem. They went out to this skull-shaped hill called Golgotha, and they shouted at Jesus, "You who saved others, can't you save yourself?" And at that point, my guess is that Martha and some of the others must have thought, they're right. This man who was so potent in his power now seems impotent. All of the things that he said about himself, they now don't seem to be coming to anything. They seem to be coming to nothing. Now, all that Mary has left is probably deep worry. If he's not here, what about me? What happens to me when I go back to Galilee and face the shame of following a crucified Messiah? And actually, what happens if the demons come back? Who's there to rescue me then? The only thing Mary had left at this point was the space to grieve. And now even that has been taken away from her. Because this sacred place where she was going to come and grieve has been desecrated. Somebody's opened the tomb. Somebody's taken the body out. Who knows what they've done to it? She can't even now grieve. So she runs to Peter and John. Probably they were staying in the same place. We know from other Gospels later on that it says that they were hidden with the doors locked for fear of the Jews. And Jesus then comes in and appears to them. But she runs to find them. They run. Peter's a bit older than John. So when the Bible talks about the disciple who Jesus loved, it's talking about John. John is talking about himself in this gospel. John gets there first. He's probably younger. John's a bit more measured. John stands outside and peers in. Peter, puffing behind, straight in to the tomb. But they both see the same thing. Grave clothes, a folded face cloth, nothing there. Did they come out and walk around and look, see where he'd been taken? Maybe. But then the Bible account says that they then go home. And Mary remains, lingering in her sorrow. She can't move on. You know, just as an aside, grieving is a process that we should honour. There's something to be said for us entering a period of mourning when we've gone through a deep loss. Like Mary wasn't prepared to just go home and carry on as normal. She remained weeping. Back in, just maybe 70, 80 years ago, if you lost a relative and you lived in this country, you would, if you were a man, you would wear a black armband. Or you might wear a black band around your hat. Most men wore hats back then. women would do the same. They would wear a black band around their hat, or they would wear black clothes. You would know if somebody was mourning. It's 50, 60, 70 years ago, you would be able to tell. Now, we have no idea. But actually, and this is just an aside, if you come across somebody who is mourning, who has lost somebody, now 50, 60 years ago, you'd have known. You'd have stopped. You'd have treated them differently. You'd have expressed sympathy and you'd have given them time to talk. These days, life moves on pretty fast. We're almost expected to get back to normal quite quickly. People back 50, 60, 70 years ago, they would have worn black armbands for at least a year after the death of a loved one. We move on quite quickly, don't we? Let me encourage you. Encourage you, church. When you come across somebody who is mourning, pause. Press pause. Stop. Listen to them. Invite them to talk to you if they want to. And give them that option. Are you comfortable comfortable telling me about what's happened? Give them space. Honor a period of mourning. And actually, because Mary does take the time to mourn, she's then going to be the one who encounters an experience which is going to be the start of the happiest ending a story has ever had. Though it linger, wait for it. It will certainly come and will not delay. Weeping may tarry for the night, but joy comes in the morning. Sometimes it's right for us to wait in our sorrow, to wait in our mourning, to not move on too quickly, to not try and fill our lives with distractions so that we don't have to think about this, but to linger in our own mourning, because that might be the place where Jesus is going to meet us. That's what happened for Mary. But at this moment, for Mary, it just appears that everything that Jesus had said were just words. And that can happen for us too. When we are going through difficult periods in life, it can make us question, can this really be true? And I want to just for a moment talk to those of you who are young people and who've heard Bible sermons and worship ever since you were born, because your parents have made you come to church. And the temptation is to go and find something that's going to be a little bit more vibrant. And do you know what? I don't get this stuff. I go to college and school. It's just so different out there to what I get when I'm in church, to what I get from mum and dad. Do you know what? It's just, it doesn't make sense. And the temptation is to leave it. Young people, let me encourage you, linger. Even when it doesn't make sense, linger. People of God, even when it doesn't make sense, linger. Wait. Because there could be something precious about to come round the corner, and it could be Jesus himself. Mary is about to encounter another perspective, though. So she waits by the tomb, she weeps, she lingers in her sorrow, and then that passage tells us that she then looks into the tomb and sees the angels. And they ask her this question. Now, I don't know what sort of tone of voice they had when they asked it. The question they ask is, why are you weeping? Why are you weeping? It's Easter Sunday, why are you weeping? Because the angels had a completely different perspective. They knew what happened. They knew all along. And Mary didn't have heaven's perspective, but she needed heaven's perspective. Do you know, there is another perspective sometimes when the reality that is staring us in the face seems to be exactly the opposite. There is another perspective quite often, and it is a heavenly perspective. There is joy after sorrow. There is celebration after mourning. There is redemption after condemnation. Do you know, as I thought about this, I was thinking about angels. I don't know if you've ever met an angel. I don't think I've ever knowingly met an angel. I did once think maybe I'd seen an angel. It was actually in Tesco's. I'm not telling you a lie. I think the only time that I might have seen an angel was in Tesco's. We were doing a food bank collection. And maybe it wasn't an angel, I don't know. And I was standing on the door, and I didn't really like doing food bank collections, if I'm honest. You know, you become one of those people who's trying to get eye contact and give somebody something, a little, oh, would you mind? And I always ignore those people. And so I wasn't that keen on doing it, but, you know, we do food bank, and so I need to support. And so I was there, and I stood at the door of Streatham Tesco's, and I was giving out this... Would you mind awfully a couple of extra things with your shopping today? And this guy comes in. Oh, I don't know whether he was an angel, but this guy comes into Tesco's. He comes in, and I say to him, oh, very apologetically, I'm so sorry to bother you. I've given you a card here with a number of items of food on. Maybe if you could just buy a couple of extra. We're just collecting for our food bank. And, you know, just a couple of extra would be good. And he looked me in the eye and he said, just a couple. And I said, yeah, just a couple. And he smiled, he took it, he said, oh, okay. He went off with his trolley. I didn't think anything of it. But then about, I don't know, 20 minutes, half an hour later, I look up and I look to my right. And at my right is the exit door. I'm standing at the entrance door to Tesco's, giving out my very apologetic lists. And at the other end are some other people working for food banks, some other volunteers, and they're collecting the food that people are bringing out. And I turn around and I see this guy, and he has a trolley full of stuff, and he just gives it to the food bank person, the whole trolley, and walks out. So he didn't do any of his own shopping. And I don't know, did I see an angel that day? I don't know. I like to think that possibly it was. I don't know. Angels just have this completely other perspective than we do. The only other thing that came to me when I was thinking about angels was the idea of Gabriel when he says to John the Baptist's father and that he's going to have a baby. And John says, but my wife's old and I'm old. And how is this going to happen? He doubts. And Gabriel says to Zechariah, I am Gabriel. I stand in the presence of God, and I've been sent to speak to you and bring you this news. And then after that, Zechariah is silent for 9 months. There is a completely different perspective in heaven. There's a completely different perspective to what you might be, I might be going through in life. There is a completely different perspective to when we watch the news and see another atrocity and we think, God, where are you? Why? There is a completely different perspective in heaven. None of the angels are saying to God, what are you doing? Why? The angels gave Mary a completely different perspective. Why are you weeping? Oh, that God would give us a heavenly perspective when we need it most. She has this encounter with angels, but there's an even more precious encounter about to come. And the tenderness of Jesus with Mary. It's just beautiful, isn't it? He calls Mary by name. It's personal. A Christian writer called Bruce Milne, he writes this sentence, which I just thought was a lovely way to encapsulate the beauty and the wonder of what happens when Jesus just says Mary. And he writes this: one word which remade her world and transformed her life ever after, and the word was her own name. Encounters with Jesus are still personal. Yes, he changed the whole history of the world in that moment, but his encounter with each one of us is personal and intentional. I don't know if you've ever thought about this. I'd never really thought about it until I sort of started looking at this passage a bit, but it's really interesting, isn't it? Why didn't Jesus show himself a few seconds or a few minutes earlier to John and to Peter? I mean, they were the main men. These were like the ones who were going to be the apostles. You know, was Jesus just a bit delayed? Was it just that Peter and John weren't there at quite the right time? If they just got their timing a little bit different, maybe Jesus, if he'd got his timing a little bit different, then he could have been there when they were there, and then they'd have all seen Jesus together, or at least maybe the men would have seen Jesus. It's a really important thing, isn't it? The men see him first. But it wasn't a mistake, and it wasn't just, oh, that's the way it happened. Jesus happens to come when Mary's there. That's interesting, isn't it? That must have been a strange coincidence for Mary. What a wonderful coincidence for her. No, it wasn't a coincidence. It was utterly intentional on the Lord's part. Jesus' encounter with Mary was personal and intentional. He waited to reveal himself until she was there. And that's what he does for us, and he does for you. And that's what he offers for you. An intentional, personal encounter. He waits for the right moment for you and for me. When scholars write about what happened and the accounts written in the New Testament of the resurrection, and you may have heard this if you've been a Christian for a long time, one of the things they say is that this is one of the things that seems to prove that this all must be true. Why? Because if those people who wrote the gospel wanted to persuade people afterwards that Jesus had risen, all the time he hadn't really, and they wanted to make up a good story so that everybody would believe this new religion, the last thing that they would have done is put down that Jesus had appeared to a woman. Why? Because back in those days, women weren't even considered reliable witnesses. They weren't allowed to give evidence in a court because they weren't considered reliable. Okay? Fortunately, things have changed. But the last thing that Bible writers would have done if they wanted to persuade people who were reading this account that this was true is to have said that Jesus appeared first to a woman. They'd have written that he appeared to Peter and John. But actually, this just helps us in terms of validating this is true, because it must have happened. They wouldn't have written this otherwise. They'd have written something more persuasive. But Jesus was completely intentional about meeting Mary. And then he gives Mary a commission. He says, go and tell my brothers. Go and tell my brothers. She's clinging on to him, the Bible says. She's clinging on to him, and he says, don't cling on to me. You need to go and tell my brothers. Jesus is saying, do you know what? There's more people out there who are hurting and broken because of what they think's happened. You need to go tell them. You need to go tell them. It's almost like this is the first great commission. This is the first chapter of what Jesus is going to say later when he says to all of his disciples, go into all the world. Tell them this good news. He starts it with Mary. Go tell my brothers. Go tell them. And Mary does. It's the best news that anybody's ever heard on the planet. It's the best news that anybody ever will hear on the planet. And the news that she was going to go and tell them was, I'm ascending to my Father and your Father, and to my God and your God. Because back then, for a Jewish person, even for the disciples, the idea of calling God Father was unheard of and unthought of. You didn't dare think of that. Yes, there were Psalms that talk about he's like a father, but we don't see God as our Father. And the good news was that Jesus was saying, go tell them that I'm going back to my Father, and he's now your Father. And my God, and he's now your God. And that remains, that commission remains for us, doesn't it? Now that picture of, don't hold on to me. Now, don't keep me to yourself. There's such good going out and tell. Go do it. Go live it. It was the first great commission. When we don't seem to be seeing the power of the resurrected Jesus, we need to wait for it. Even though it may sometimes be waiting for it through tears or doubts or through times when it doesn't seem to make any sense, we need to wait for it. We need to wait for him to appear. We exercise faith and we ask God to give us reminders of what the perspective of heaven is, where I'm sitting or standing at the moment. What's a heavenly perspective? Lord, send your angels to me. Give me that heavenly perspective. And we can expect that God will send his angels to help. And he may send angels, he may send others, first of all, to help and to speak words of comfort or encouragement. But you know, he's always paving the way. That's what the angels were doing. When the angels came and they said, why are you weeping? They were coming to pave the way for the real encounter that Mary needed. And sometimes when we are in our distress and when we're facing difficulties, God will send people to us like angels. And they're there to pave the way. And sometimes you will be that angel who will go and pave the way. Why are you weeping? But we never want the attention to remain on us. Okay, angels always push the attention back to the one who's glorified. Yeah? When you're being an angel of mercy, sometimes we hear those terms, don't we? Oh, she's been an angel of mercy to me. You know what? We are angels of mercy, but we're paving the way for encounters with the living, risen Jesus, who longs to encounter individuals personally and intentionally, and never by accident, and it's never coincidence. And the fact that you're sitting in this room today is not coincidence. And it's not by accident. And if you've sensed something in your spirit today, that's the personal engagement of the Lord Jesus with your heart. He's personal and intentional. Lo, Jesus meets us, risen from the tomb. Lovingly he greets us, scatters fear and gloom. Let the church with gladness hymns of triumph sing, for her Lord now liveth, death has lost its sting. Thine be the glory, risen conquering Son. Endless is the victory, thou our death has won. Can we sing that a cappella? Do you think? There's enough people who know it. Joel's nodding. Joel, it might just be you and me. Thine be the glory, risen conquering Son. Endless is the victory, thou our death has won. Thine be the glory. Thine be the glory, risen conquering Son. Endless is the victory thou o'er death has won. Stand with me. Thine be the glory, risen conquering Son. Endless is the victory thou o'er death has won. Last time. Thine be the glory, risen conquering Son. Endless is the victory thou o'er death has won. Amen.